The second case for oral argument this morning is the State of South Dakota versus David Christensen. Mr. Philip Peterson, an attorney from Beresford, represents the appellant, Mr. Christensen, and Mr. Craig Eichstead, a deputy attorney general from Pierre, represents the appellee, State of South Dakota. Mr. Peterson, you may proceed, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel, justices. Before I get into the facts of my case, I would like to make an apology to the court, and that is the transcript of the motion to suppress dated January 18th, 2002 was ordered by myself pursuant to an order for transcript on June 14th of 2002. I received a letter back from the official court reporter, and he says, "This is to advise you that after reviewing my files, it has become apparent that I was not the reporter for the January 18th, 2002 bond reduction hearing." And then he puts in parentheses, "You have listed it as a motion to suppress." I took that to mean that he was only not there for the bond reduction hearing and that I would be getting all the transcripts. Of course, when the transcripts came much later, it wasn't with him, and I was confused by his letter, and I apologize to the court that the transcript of that motion to suppress is not in the record, and that was pointed out by counsel for the state, and I just wanted to open with that and admit that that was a mistake. I ordered it, I thought I had it, and I didn't.
That's why we call it the practice of law.
Yes, sir.
You may proceed.
My client, David Christensen, lived in Irene, South Dakota, and he was having difficulty with his neighbor, and it escalated to the point that his neighbor filed a protection order against him. And on June 29th of 2001, that protection order was granted. Now, at the same time, my client was over at Human Services Center being evaluated. That protection order indicated that he was to surrender all firearms to the Clay County Sheriff. Now, he was over at Human Services Center, so he couldn't possibly do that personally. So what he did was he contacted a friend and was trying to get his friend to go and get his weapons out of his house, give them to the sheriff's office, and lock up his house, because he knew his house was unlocked.
Was he voluntarily or involuntarily committed?
Involuntarily.
Did he notify the sheriff that he was attempting to get the guns delivered to the sheriff?
The sheriff had knowledge. He didn't personally notify them, but the sheriff's office had knowledge through the counselor at Human Services Center that he was attempting to comply with the protection order.
What does attempting to comply mean? Immediately, or in the next week, or the next day, or what?
Well, he was trying to he had contacted a friend and wanted the friend to do it. He thought that was going to happen. And before that happened, Justice Zinner, the sheriff's office went in and took them.
But you're not suggesting the sheriff knew a time frame on which the friend was going to supposedly remove the guns?
I'm not. Okay. No. So anyway, just 2 days later, after Mr. Christensen had received the protection order, had been served the protection order, deputies from the Clay County Sheriff's Office entered his home. As I indicated, it was unlocked, to seize the weapons that were indicated in the protection order.
What do you assert that they should have done? Gone to the judge and gotten a warrant to pick up the weapons?
Yes, that's what I'm asserting. And the reason I'm asserting that is because the protection order said that he was to comply and turn over his weapons. They knew that he was attempting to do that. If they were going to forego his attempts, and they knew the guns weren't going anywhere, he was in Human Services Center and they were monitoring his presence there.
But wasn't he going to be released very shortly? Next day or two?
That was their presumption.
All right.
Yes.
Well, what is the sheriff supposed to do in that situation? Just take a statement, "Well, I'm going to get the guns and bring them to you, so you don't need to worry, Sheriff." There's a court order out there. Is the sheriff supposed to take that at face value?
Well, the court order put the burden on my client to turn him over, and he was trying to do that. And it was only if that failed that the sheriff's office was to take the action.
If the state had done what you kind of agreed to, that they should have gone to get a warrant from a judge to go pick up those weapons, and if they had done it, you know, what difference would it make? They would have been in there, they would have saw what they saw, and is there any significant difference to that?
Well, I think there's a lot of difference, because our statutes require a search warrant to go into a place. The end result would have been the same, but our legal system is based on certain rules, and my position is that the rules weren't followed.
But what's the difference between a search warrant functionally and the documentation that was filed to get this protection order? After all, both require some kind of sworn testimony that there's a reasonable basis or probable cause to believe that the items to be seized are where they are. Why shouldn't the protection order be treated equivalent to a search warrant?
Well, it wasn't the underlying documentation that I'm objecting to. It was the wording in the protection order that ordered my client to comply, which he was attempting to comply with, and that the sheriff's office went ahead anyway, irregardless of his efforts, and just went ahead and entered his home and seized his weapons.
It was a 48-hour deadline, is that right?
Pardon me?
There was a 48-hour deadline in the protection order for your client to comply.
I don't recall that there was a deadline. If there was, I apologize.
Somewhere in the record, I thought I saw 48 hours. There was a 48-hour deadline, and the sheriff did not go and get the guns until after the 48 hours expired. Is that not in the record?
I don't recall that.
Okay.
Being in the record.
And what was the exact wording in the protection order directing the sheriff to seize those guns?
Respondent surrender. Dave Christensen, surrender all firearms to the Clay County Sheriff. If they are not surrendered, the Clay County Sheriff is to take steps necessary to obtain firearms.
Does that give him enough authority to take the steps to move into that, to go into the home?
I don't think so, not until my client has refused to do it. In any event, after they went into the home then on July 2nd, they did not have a warrant. While in the residence, which they were there to seize the weapons, they observed marijuana in his residence.
Well, they also observed weapons too, didn't they?
Oh, yes. But they seized those.
Right.
Yes. Yes. But they observed marijuana around the house in different places. So they went and obtained a search warrant then
Are you challenging the motives of why they actually went into the house? Are you conceding that they went in the house solely to get the guns?
I'm not challenging their motives. No.
All right. Thank you.
Going to the application for authority to do this, apparently the application says, I request he surrender all firearms to the Clay County Sheriff, and that the Clay County Sheriff be granted authority to enter his residence to confiscate all firearms immediately. Now that's the request, not the answer. And Circuit Court Judge Eng directed respondents surrender all firearms to the Clay County Sheriff. If they're not surrendered, the Clay County Sheriff is to take steps necessary, but he didn't say immediately, to obtain firearms. Is that basically correct as far as you know?
Yes, that's correct. And I think that's significant, because the application and the resulting order were different. The application was, we want to go get them immediately. But that isn't what Judge Eng signed. Judge Eng said he's to turn them over, and if he fails to do that, then you can go get them.
Okay.
How much time expired then between the time that the order was signed and the sheriff went and got?
There were 3 days between when it was signed and when they went in. There were 2 days between when my client, Mr. Christensen, was served and became aware of it, and when they went in.
He was served after, while he was already in the Human Services Center?
That's correct.
All right.
The search warrant indicated that they could search for drugs, drug paraphernalia, illegal weapons, and items to indicate an intent to distribute drugs. So they go back in the residence with this search warrant to get the drugs. While in the residence, they opened a trunk. And in that trunk, they saw magazines and videos. And the testimony of the deputy sheriff is that he became suspicious because of the titles of the videos. And the two that he specifically talks about are Czech Children's Day and Nudist Moms and Daughters. He also found magazines in there with the names of Nickelodeon, Jack and Jill. He says, I became suspicious that there might be child pornography in the house. So based upon that fact, while they were in the residence with a search warrant to search for drugs and more weapons if they found any, they seized this trunk and any other videos and magazines that they found lying around that they thought might be suspicious of child pornography. They took those back to the evidence room at the sheriff's office, and they held them, and then they got another search warrant to view them. And as a result of viewing the videos and the magazines, ultimately an indictment was issued against my client, charging him with 77 counts of child pornography and one count of marijuana. Now, during the course of this matter, I made two motions to suppress.
And your client was acquitted on nearly all the charges on the pornography, right?
That's correct. So out of 77 counts, he was acquitted of 75.
Did the two counts he was convicted from come out of that trunk, too?
Yes.
Okay.
They were the videotapes. There were two videotapes.
Yes, that he was convicted on.
That were the basis of the pornography conviction.
Yes.
Plus, they used some of the evidence for other acts, evidence to not theoretically to convict, but just to, you know, make him look bad enough to convict, right?
That's correct. They used the other acts evidence to show an intent, and that intent was that I look at pictures of nude children and these other videos which had conversation in them made him look bad, and so if he's looking at nude children, which those pictures weren't in and of themselves pornography, they convinced the jury that they were because of his state of mind. So it was an unusual case. So as we presented this case to the jury, and one of the arguments made by the state in their brief is that we didn't object to all these videos as they came in, even though we had made two suppression motions. And I'm aware of what this court has said about that, but I need to explain what our tactical decision was at that point. What we did was we went to the library here at the university and we got magazines and books, even National Geographic, that had pictures that were at least as graphic as what Mr. Christensen had in his house, and we were going to offer those as our defense, that you can just go in the library and get this stuff. The stuff I had in my house wasn't pornography. Well, my client and I thought about that, and we thought because of the number of videos, 77 videos and books, if we object to every one of them and then offer our own set that we think are worse, the jury will get really confused about that. So we made a tactical decision. We're going to let all this stuff come in, and then we're going to put in our own stuff and then make the argument that it wasn't pornography. Of course, the jury agreed with us by and large and only found that two were pornography. I understand what this court has said about that, about not objecting. When you've made a motion to suppress, you need to object to preserve your objection. But I just wanted to explain the tactical decision we made.
I know, but can't you make your motion in trial, outside the presence of the jury?
We we had, I think, 116 pieces of evidence, and...
So the answer is yes, but slowly?
The answer is yes, the trial probably would have lasted two more days.
Well, you could have also asked for a standing objection.
Yes, yes.
But you didn't do that either.
Didn't do that. In any event, we made a motion to reconsider in addition to the two motions to suppress, and that related to the other acts videos that Justice Sabers has talked about. And those were videos of my client either took them himself or had them in his possession, one or the other, just of neighborhood kids swinging on the swings or at the swimming pool or that type of thing. There was no nudity involved. But the intent was to show the jury that he had a fascination with young children. So...
Now, were all those videos in that trunk? Where were the videos?
I believe all the videos were in the trunk. No. There were... there were a group of home movies titled Girls 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. that were not in the trunk. I think the ones in the trunk were all the commercial ones, were the ones that he had in his possession that he either took or someone else took.
All right, so the ones you're talking about now were not in the trunk?
Not in the trunk.
And where were
they? The other acts videos.
Where were they?
Just, I think, in his bedroom.
Okay.
Not secured.
Mm-hmm. They're in plain view.
That would probably be fair.
And they had these titles written on them, so if the officers would have picked up the video, they could have readily seen a title. Is that...
Would have said Girls 1. Another one would have said Girls 2. Okay.
That assumes they had the right to be in the bedroom. And that assumes that they had the right to be, the officers had the right to be in the bedroom in the first instance.
That's correct.
All right.
Now, the warrant, I understood you to say earlier, the warrant gave him authority to search for drugs and guns?
Yes.
Okay.
And at that point, they had not looked in the trunk?
When they got the warrant?
Right.
Correct. Okay. Correct. They looked in the trunk as a result of the warrant.
All right.
Yeah, that's correct.
I need you to go back to the other acts evidence. So I make sure I understand this. I thought that the trial court had excluded all of the videotapes except for the ones where the defendant's own comments were being made on the videotape about, you know, while they were videotaping a young child, either his comment or a statement by somebody else naming him as being there at the time. So in essence, there were only two videotapes that were introduced into evidence. Is that right?
There were only two. They were all introduced into evidence. There were only two only two of that type that the state offered as other acts.
Well, I understood the state to argue that the trial court did not allow them all into evidence. Am I incorrect in that?
Say that again.
Well, I understood the state's argument that the trial court did not allow all the tapes into evidence. Am I incorrect on that? I can ask the state on their argument.
Well, the state, they got in all of the, what they consider pornographic tapes, plus two of the other acts tapes.
And then they did not get three of the other acts tapes then, is that?
That's right, that's right. And they didn't try to offer them. They only tried to offer two.
Okay.
And they got them both in.
And the two that they offered had the defendant's comments or somebody
else's
comments on it talking to the defendant.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So I need to summarize here. We filed a motion to suppress, first of all, based upon the fact that they were in the home improperly because of the protection order, because they had not waited to see if my client would voluntarily turn over his weapons. Secondly, when they were in the home, pursuant to the search warrant that they obtained to get marijuana, they observed these tapes, and this court has required that there be probable cause that a crime has been committed. And the only statement by the deputy sheriff was that he was suspicious that there might be child pornography. That falls way short of the burden that this court has required, that being that that there be probable cause that a crime has been committed. This court has said that when you view something, it must be immediately evident that it's seizable. These tapes were not immediately evident they were seizable. Girls 1, Girls 2, Girls 3, Girls 4 on the name of a tape, Nickelodeon, Jack and Jill, not immediately evident that they should have been seized.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Eichstead, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, I might try to state a couple of things factually to begin with. On the videotapes, as I understand it, there were several categories of videotapes. There were some commercial ones, and there were also commercial magazines that had nudity, adult and child nudity in them. Those are not at issue on this appeal because the defendant was not found guilty relating to the to these various commercial videos. The only thing, he was found guilty of two counts, as the court is aware, and those counts related to exhibits 24 and 26, which are the state exhibit numbers on the videotapes. Those should be in the settled record that this court has. Those were entitled Girls Number 4 and Girls 1. The state offered 5 videotapes for other acts evidence. The trial court excluded 3 of those, and those were exhibits 27, 28, and 29. And the trial court stated as its rationale for excluding those that they did not contain any comments, and therefore they were less relevant than those that had comments on them indicating a sexual interest in little girls. Now, the ones that thus that remain at issue for the appeal under the other acts theory are exhibits number 30 and 32, and with all of these exhibit numbers that I gave, there's also an additional one. The original tapes are very small camcorder tapes. They'd be entitled 30, 28, 29, whatever. But there's also a copy that Deputy Howe made of each of these tapes, and it'll generally be entitled 30A, 32A. But those are the two that are at issue now. And it's the state's argument that those were highly relevant under the statute 22-22-22 as it existed at the time that the defendant was charged, because the statute requires that the depiction be for the purpose of exciting someone sexually, and so there's an intent element there, and so the state needed to show that the possessor of these tapes, the defendant, was in fact one who was of that particular propensity, or who would be, maybe not so much propensity as just someone who would be excited by little girls, and these two tapes did that very well. So that's the reason that they were admitted. But that generally is a summary of what those tapes were. Now, as to the issue of going into the house in the first instance, the testimony was that the deputy sheriff or the sheriff was aware for something in the vicinity of 48 hours that there might be a friend involved who could go and lock the house or perhaps give them the guns, but Deputy Howe testified at the suppression hearing that the friend never materialized. So, and after having waited for 48 hours, the sheriff then decided to go ahead. And in answer to your question, Justice Konenkamp, I don't believe that there was any limitation in the record or in the order itself to 48 hours, but the sheriff believed that once he had notified the defendant in the Human Services Center that he'd probably waited long enough, because it was known, I believe, that there were some high-powered weapons there. The door was unlocked. I mean, it's a small town, there are people that live there, there are children that live there, so it was a sort of a situation that the sheriff felt that he had to address at that point.
Mr. Eichstead, there's a, obviously we, the courts enter protection orders every day. And
correct.
If there are requests that, or indications to the court that there might be guns or other weapons, oftentimes the judge will put something such as a missed protection order. Are you asking this court to consider those as search warrants, that when the courts sign them, that basically that gives law enforcement the authority to walk into anybody's home without anything further than an order that's very general in scope?
Not directly, Your Honor. We're arguing it based on the facts that we have here and on knowing that this defendant was in the Human Services Center, that he could be released, that he was perhaps unstable. There are all a number of factors that we've outlined there which I think differentiate this from just some general case. Now, I suppose some of them you might have in the ordinary case because with the protection order, maybe there's thought to be some basic instability there. But the sheriff did wait for 48 hours. And you know, I don't think that every protection order would. But this one, especially in the way that it was worded, this wasn't all that general, except it said that the sheriff was to take steps. If the guns are not turned over, the sheriff was to take steps to get a hold of them. He knew that the door was unlocked, waited for some time for the friend, and it didn't happen. And then that in our view, was the time for him to go do it. And this is a different situation.
So under what exception, then, does this fall?
Well, we've argued in an exigent circumstances exception due to the fact the door was not locked and so on. Now, also we need to bear in mind that the record is somewhat incomplete because the transcript wasn't there. There may well have been more factors, and the matter of the exigent circumstances exception was tried before the trial court, and the transcript of that particular portion of the hearing just was never made. So we don't know what all the circumstances may be, and under those circumstances, or when that's the case, this court said that no transcript issue is waived because we really can't evaluate what the trial court did. So that's really quite important here as far as that's concerned. But it is
one more question.
Yeah, sure.
Why does the fact that the door was unlocked, why is that significant to this court?
To the state, it's significant because any neighbor or any child or anyone in the vicinity could come and enter that house and get at those guns. There was a loaded pistol that was lying right by the door. There were assault rifles that were in the house. Now, admittedly, the sheriff didn't know exactly where the guns were, but they had some knowledge of the nature of the guns and the fact that we're talking about some very big firepower here.
Was the defendant the sole occupant of that house?
As far as I know, yes, Your Honor.
So they could not go knock on the door and somebody to answer and say, we're here to get the guns.
No, he was. They knew he was at the Human Services Center, and there's testimony that from the deputy sheriff that he was the sole occupant, so I assume that he knew that. So at that point, as we said, friend never materialized, and we ended up with the sheriff going in. Now, immediately upon going in, they seized the guns. But as Mr. Peterson indicated, they also viewed marijuana in quite a number of places, as well as the guns and some other things. So based on that, they went back and they got the search warrant to search the house for the drugs, the marijuana, other guns, things of that nature. And it's important for what happened after that they were to search for marijuana and drugs and so on, because those are items that can be extremely small. You could be looking for something as small as a marijuana seed. You're also looking for paraphernalia under that warrant.
Were any of these guns illegal to possess?
He was never charged. I don't know, Your Honor. I really haven't researched that.
Right.
It wasn't an issue. But there were some assault rifles with high power magazines, but I don't know if they were illegal or not. At any rate, what's important about what's in that search warrant this time around is that they'd be searching for things that can be very small, from paraphernalia to a marijuana seed, a marijuana leaf, and so on, which means that they would be searching in the trunk. Now, as far as what was found where, question from the court during Mr. Peterson's argument, I think that most of these homemade videotapes that constituted the other acts tapes and as to which there was a conviction were found in, I believe, in the living room on a wall cabinet that would hold videotapes. Once again, though, it was an area that was big enough to hold drugs for sure and probably some items of paraphernalia. You might not have found a gun in there, but you certainly could have found some marijuana, and so they were looking in places where those items that were on the search warrant could be found. Now, I think that the primary challenge here is to whether or not it was readily apparent or whether there was probable cause that there was another crime involved here. And what one needs to do for that, rather than looking at the federal statutes as the defendant would have you do, is to look at the state statute as it was. And the state statute says that child nudity can be, if the depiction is done for the purpose of sexual gratification, that can be child pornography. Unlike the federal statute, which is quoted in the defendant's brief, that says that there needs to be a lewd depiction of genitals, which is something that the state has adopted now, but at the time, in 2001, it was strictly a matter of nudity plus the depiction for sexual gratification. And since that's the case, these pictures showed evidence that there was likely a violation of that statute. That's all that's required for probable cause. We don't need to show all of the elements. And when we're talking about an intent element, that's something that physical evidence oftentimes will not show. But nonetheless, the physical evidence was there, and it was evidence of this additional crime of possession of the child pornography under the statute as it existed when the search was completed.
That finding or decision is not being challenged by your opponent, is it? On the sufficiency of the evidence or
sufficiency
on the
of the
merits
evidence
that
not,
it's not pornography.
Is not being challenged, but what is being challenged
is the right to have it.
Whether they would have had probable cause or whether it would have been immediately apparent under the plain view doctrine that this constituted another violation of the law. That's what they're challenging. And it's our view that clearly it would indicate or at least be evidence of another violation of the law, and that's all it needs to be as evidence. It doesn't need to conclusively show it. Now, I did want to address one other thing that Mr. Peterson said on behalf of the defendant, that he had made a tactical decision not to object, and I believe that was a tactical decision not to object to the other act's testimony, and the state would feel that making such a tactical decision is fatal to raising it on appeal, because if you have decided as the trial attorney that you are not going to object to particular evidence because it would either be better for you to have it in there or not objecting will facilitate you getting in other evidence that you want that you think will be to your advantage, then that is a classic waiver of the argument. And I think that waiver certainly applies to the other act's evidence and quite probably applies to all of the other evidence too, since if you look at the transcript, you will see that there was no objection as to the other act's evidence on this ground. There was another objection on the ground that it ought not to be admitted because under this federal statute it doesn't constitute pornography. But there wasn't any objection on the ground that it was improperly seized. Likewise, the other matters, there was no objection to the marijuana itself being admitted. One can look at in the transcript and see that that's true. So having at that point, in the first instance, not having caused the transcript to be in the record, but also not having objected at the time of trial under this court's case of State versus Bryant Corey, it would be fatal to raising those issues on appeal. And that, it would seem, applies pretty much across the board to all three issues. I believe that that we would, how I would summarize the state's case on this appeal is that as to that first, as to the first entry of the house for the guns, it was necessary, given the facts as they were presented under an exigent circumstances situation. But even if that is not the case, or arguably not the case, the record is not sufficiently complete in order for the court to evaluate that. The hearing of January 18th is not in the record, and therefore we're really not in a position, or the court is not in a position, to fully consider that matter, because there may well have been other evidence presented there that would have allowed that. But it is the state's position that there were sufficient exigent circumstances, given that the house was in the community, the door was unlocked, the guns are known to be there, all these other factors we've discussed, there was sufficient evidence, there's a sufficient basis to allow that. Then once there, once properly in the residence, then the officers viewed the marijuana in quite a number of places in the house. They seized the guns in order to take care of that particular danger, and they went back to Vermilion. They got a search warrant from Circuit Judge Eng allowing them to search the house for the drugs.
Would it be fair to the state and the defendant to require the production of that transcript in order to determine the question you say cannot?
Well, that may be possible, Your Honor. In general, our office is fairly generous about such things if we're called up late. But of course, at this point, we've already briefed it, and I'm not in a position to stipulate it to. Obviously, the court can order that if it wants. But at this point, we're not stipulating to it. We might well have done so earlier in the case. I can't say, but. But that may be one possibility. But to get back to where we were, then the officers were appropriately in the house under search warrant number one. They seized the marijuana, and they searched areas that were small enough to hold marijuana, drugs, paraphernalia, guns, those things that were named in the warrant. They, of course, seized the marijuana pursuant to the warrant, but they also seized these videotapes when they were in plain view at those points at which the officers had a right to be. It was immediately apparent to the officers they could be evidence of this other crime. There was probable cause to believe that they were evidence of the other crime, and so they seized them and took them into possession. But in order to handle the matter appropriately and then give Mr. Christensen every right to privacy that he might have, they got a second search warrant to allow them to view the videotapes, and that was the point from which the charges were made. And as I already argued, the evidence, the other acts evidence, is appropriate to show the defendant's intent, and furthermore, by explicitly deciding not to object to any of this evidence, the defendant has waived the argument for purposes of appeal because he didn't give the trial court any chance to rule on it at the time of trial. That's the state's case in this matter, Your Honors, and based on that and the other arguments we've made in the briefs, we would ask that this matter be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Peterson, you have 10 minutes, sir.
I will say that counsel for the state is correct that there were five videos offered for other acts. I was correct when I said that there were just two, and those were the ones that were allowed in. My confusion on that was there were only two that contained comments, and those are the ones that the judge allowed in. Those other three without comments, he said, had no relevancy, had insufficient relevancy to be allowed in. Regarding the other acts videos, counsel would indicate that no objection was made. I made pretrial motions and objected at the time that they were offered, and I think that certainly has been preserved for this court to consider. Regarding the videos, when the deputy sheriff and whoever was with him was in the house, instead of seizing them and taking them to the evidence room, it seems logical to me that they should have done the same thing that they did with the marijuana, and that they should have prepared an affidavit. They should have given it to a magistrate or judge so that they could consider, is this stuff seizable? They made their own decision, and I say that they made it incorrectly. I would like to see that what the affidavit would have said for them to seize a Nickelodeon magazine or a Jack and Jill. What would they have said in their affidavit? What's wrong with that? If that's wrong, we're all in trouble. A little cassette video that says girls won on it. Now, how could they argue to a magistrate that that was seizable? There were a whole bunch of those. Czech, and we're talking about Czechoslovakian here, Czech Children's Days. What in that title would make a magistrate or a judge think that that was seizable? Nudist moms and daughters. These things weren't viewed, obviously, before they seized them. They just made a decision based on suspicion and not probable cause that these items could be seized. I think that's improper.
Well, do we look at the title of each individual piece of evidence, or do we look at the totality of all the types of evidence that was there to determine whether there was an objective rather than subjective basis for establishing probable cause?
What I'm doing, Justice Zinner, is I'm taking his testimony as to what he viewed, and I'm giving you the totality of what he said that he made his decision on. I agree that you have to look at the totality, but those are the specific titles that he identified when he defended his position and testified that he thought that these items were suspicious. There's only one other thing I haven't mentioned, and that was a commercial magazine that showed what he thought was a 10-year-old girl from the waist up. And that's it. Those are the things I've identified, and that's, on the basis of those items, he determined that there was probable cause that another crime had been committed. And that's outlined in my brief, and I don't think that's possible. I don't think you can get there. This court has said that you have to have reasonable cause that another crime has been committed, or probable cause. It was mere suspicion. He even used the word suspicion 3 or 4 times. Well, again, I was suspicious.
But again, we don't use the officer's subjective intent. Don't we look at whether there's an objective basis to find probable cause?
I agree with that. I agree with that. And I've tried to give you everything that he testified that he utilized in making that decision. The other argument that I'd like to make before I close is when Judge Rush allowed the other acts evidence, of course, this court has set a two-prong test. Number one, is it relevant? And number two, is it more probative or is it more prejudicial? And Judge Rush has indicated in his opinion, which is a part of the record, that the prejudicial aspect was huge, that if the jury saw these videos with the comments being made, whether they were made by my client or someone else, if the jury saw those videos and heard those comments, it would be huge and he'd be convicted, in his opinion, or there was a strong likelihood that he would be convicted. And yet, he allowed those in when there was no no nudity, just as I indicated before in my argument children playing in a park, children at a swimming pool, neighborhood children at a backyard barbecue, those types of things. And yet, knowing the consequence of those comments, knowing that they would likely result in a conviction, and with what I think is a very small relevancy to the actual videos on which he was convicted, the judge still let him in.
And the judge noted, though, that there were sexual overtones in the comments being made on the videotape.
Yes, he did. He certainly did.
Isn't that adequate?
In his mind, it was. But Justice Zinner, what my client was convicted of was possessing pictures of new children. And the videos with the comments didn't have any nudity in it. So that's why I say the relevancy issue isn't strong enough to overcome the prejudice, the extreme prejudice that even Judge Rush acknowledged.
He may have acknowledged what you said, but he did not make a finding that it was substantially more prejudicial than probative.
He did not. No, he did not. That's correct.
And isn't that required? Isn't that crucial?
That's where I'm saying he made the mistake. Yes. That finding should have been made, in my opinion.
Okay.
So, based on the fact that my client objects to the protection order, as Justice Meyer Henry has said, we cannot exchange protection orders for search warrants. I think that's improper. I think that's what the sheriff's office did here. So the subsequent search warrant, which was issued based upon what they saw when they were in the house on the protection order, is invalid. And the evidence that has been seized should have been suppressed, and I would urge this court to order a reversal in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.